Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Katie Weaver tells us how children are being encouraged to plant and take care of native trees and flowers. Dan Novak presents this week's education report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first,
a wildlife and insect expert who urges people to create gardens with native plants is now bringing children into the effort. Doug Tellamy has become a leading supporter for returning native plants and trees to places so they can support birds, bees, and other wildlife. He is urging people to push for parks, playgrounds, schools and colleges, hospitals and office buildings, golf courses, and even airports to join in spreading native plants. Tellamy's new book is called Nature's Best Hope: How You Can Save the World in Your Own Yard. It is aimed at middle schoolers and was released earlier this month in time for Earth Day. The book follows Tellamy's influential book from 1999 for all readers, Nature's Best Hope, a new approach to conversation that starts in your yard. He hopes the new book will carry its message into classrooms around the country. The idea is that kids are the future stewards of our planet, he said in an interview with the Associated Press. I get contacted by kids all the time, and this is stuff you can do and actually see results, he said. Little things can make a big difference. You don't have to worry about the entire planet. Just do something about the little piece of the planet that you can do something about. That's really motivating for parents as well as kids, he said. The book for young people lists easy changes that children can make at home to create better habitats for insects and birds. The book includes easy projects like building a bee hotel out of an empty metal can and pieces of paper. Or you might want to cover window wells so little creatures do not get trapped in them. Or just plant an acorn. It's free and easy, and you can watch it grow, and it makes a big difference, Tellamy says. He imagines a future of many little pollinator-friendly spaces, a growth of gardens and public spaces, all loosely linked to form a homegrown national park. Ty Montanarella helps lead school and out-of-school programs for the New York Botanical Garden. She teaches kindergarten through high school kids about native plants. She said spreading the word that Americans can do things at home to improve the environment is important. At the heart of Tellamy's book is the observation of plants and the interaction between plants and birds and insects. It underscores the connectivity of our food web and of society, she said. Kids sometimes feel a greater sense of urgency and call to action than adults, she continued. Many of these ideas seem sensible and practical for kids, while they can be a heavier lift for adults sometimes. I'm Katie Weaver.
On April 5th, a man killed four children in a Brazilian daycare center. In the weeks since, Brazilian officials have detained 300 adults and children nationwide. The detainees are accused of spreading hate speech or encouraging school violence. Little has been made public about the crackdown. It risks an abuse of power by the country's court system. It also shows the strong reaction to school violence across federal, state, and city levels. Brazil's efforts to end school attacks are very different from those of the United States. In the U.S., such attacks have been more common and more deadly for a longer period. But measures to prevent the violence have come much more slowly. Actions taken in the U.S. are informing the Brazilian response, said Hanan Theodoro. He is a researcher with the Center for the Study of Violence at the University of São Paulo in Brazil. We have learned from the successes and the mistakes of other countries, especially the United States, Theodoro told the Associated Press. Brazil has seen almost 24 attacks or incidents of violence in schools since 2000. Half of them have been in the past year. President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva's government has looked for ideas from researchers and experts. This week, he organized a meeting of ministers, mayors, and Supreme Court justices to discuss possible solutions. Some measures that Brazil has already taken are in line with those introduced over time in the U.S. Those measures include the creation of emergency communications systems, safety training for school workers, federal money for mental health, and more security equipment. But Brazil has also detained suspects and has pushed to regulate social media sites. Those measures have not been taken in the U.S. Many Brazilian states did not wait for the federal response. São Paulo, for example, temporarily hired 550 mental health experts to work at its public schools. It also hired 1,000 private security guards. School shootings in the U.S. often create debate, but at the federal level, the debate usually ends without a solution. Democrats center on gun control, while Republicans push for stronger security measures. Brazil's efforts have gained support in part because measures have not included restricting gun use. Gun control is increasingly a divisive political issue in Brazil, like it is in the U.S. Brazil's school attacks are also more often carried out with other weapons, especially knives. In the U.S., legislation rarely passes. There have been exceptions, however. A bill was approved last year after an attack at a Texas elementary school and other mass shootings. The bill made background checks stricter and kept guns away from those guilty of domestic violence. The bill also gave $1 billion for student mental health and school security. Other change has come more slowly. In almost every state, schools are now required to have safety plans that often include what to do if a shooter enters the school. Many individual school systems have their own safety call centers. Some use software to watch social media for threats. Lawmaker Eduardo Bolsonaro is the son of Brazil's far-right former president. He is calling for metal detectors and armed guards. He introduced a bill to make them required at all schools. For Brazil, hoping for quick solutions risks introducing abuses of power. Officials have not offered details on why the 302 suspects have been arrested in the past 2 weeks. When asked by the AP, the Justice Ministry did not say how many of the detainees were under the age of 18. The ministry is also ordering a national consumer agency to fine technology companies for not removing content seen as praising school violence or making threats. There appears to be large support for regulating social media sites. At this week's meeting in the Capitol, Lula, his justice minister, two Supreme Court justices, and the Senate's president voiced support for regulation of the sites. They argued that speech that is illegal in real life cannot be permitted online. The Rights in Network Coalition is a Brazilian group of 50 organizations centered on basic digital rights. It has expressed concern over giving the government the power to decide what can be said on social media. Some social media platforms resisted the move, but are now agreeing to the changes. More than 750 profiles have been removed or suspended, Justice Minister Flavio Dino said. I'm Dan Novak.
You just heard Dan Novak present this week's education report. He joins me now to talk more about the story. Hi, Dan. Welcome back.
Good to be back, Ashley.
Your story was about Brazil's strong reaction to attacks in schools and how the country's reaction has differed from how the United States deals with school attacks. In the story, you say that actions taken in the U.S. have informed the Brazilian response. Can you explain what the word response means?
Sure. Put simply, a response is a written or spoken answer to something. So you just asked me a question, and now I'm responding with an answer. Respond is the verb. A response can also be any reaction to something. You often hear the phrase emergency response in connection to disasters like fires or floods.
So how has the response to school attacks differed in Brazil and the United States?
In Brazil, the response to a string of attacks has been quick and harsh. About 300 people, both adults and minors, have been arrested in the past 2 weeks after an April 5th shooting. They are accused of spreading hate speech and encouraging violence. Brazil has also taken steps to remove social media profiles of people who are seen to be encouraging violence. In the U.S., the response is often slow and ineffective. Brazilian officials say they are learning from both the successes and mistakes of the United States.
All right. Well, thanks again, Dan, for joining me on today's program.
You're welcome, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Enberg. History is usually a process of slow change. However, certain events also can change the course of history. Napoleon's defeat at Waterloo was such an event. So was the first airplane flight by the Wright brothers, or the meeting between the Spanish explorer Cortez and the Aztec king Montezuma. All these events were moments that changed history. And so it was, too, with the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
We take you now to Washington.
The details are not available. They will be in a few minutes. The White House is now giving out a statement. The attack apparently was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu. The president's brief statement was read to reporters by Stephen Early, the president's secretary. A Japanese attack upon Pearl Harbor naturally would mean war. Such an attack would naturally bring a counterattack, and hostilities of this kind would naturally mean that the president would ask Congress for a declaration of war.
The surprise attack on America's large naval base in Hawaii was a great military success for Japan. However, the attack on Pearl Harbor had more than a military meaning. The attack would force Americans to enter World War II. More importantly, it would also make them better recognize their position as one of the most powerful nations in the world. In future weeks, we will discuss the military and political events of World War II. But today, we look back at the years before the United States entered that war. The period between the end of World War I and the attack on Pearl Harbor lasted only 23 years, from 1918 to 1941. But those years were filled with important changes in American politics, culture, and traditions. We start our review of these years with politics. In 1920, Americans elected Republican Warren Harding to the presidency. The voters were tired of the progressive policies of Democratic President Woodrow Wilson. They were especially tired of Wilson's desire for the United States to play an active role in the new League of Nations. Harding was a conservative Republican, and so were the two presidents who followed him, Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover. All three of these presidents generally followed conservative economic policies, and they did not take an active part in world affairs. Americans turned away from Republican rule in the election of 1932. They elected the Democratic presidential candidate, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and they continued to re-elect him. In this way, the conservative Republican policies of the 1920s changed to the more progressive policies of Roosevelt in the 1930s. The change happened mainly because of economic troubles.
So keep cool, and keep Coolidge is the slogan of today.
The 1920s were a time of growth and business strength. President Calvin Coolidge said during his term that the chief business of the American people is business. This generally was the same belief of the other Republican presidents during the period, Warren Harding and Herbert Hoover. There was a good reason for this. The economy expanded greatly during the 1920s. Many Americans made a great deal of money on the stock market, and wages for workers increased as well. However, economic growth ended suddenly with the stock market crash of October 1929. In that month, the stocks for many leading companies fell sharply, and they continued to fall in the months that followed. Many Americans lost great amounts of money, and the public at large lost faith in the economy. Soon, the economy was in ruins, and businesses were closing their doors. President Hoover tried to solve the crisis, but he was not willing to take the strong actions that were needed to end it. As time passed, many Americans began to blame Hoover for the terrible economic depression. Democrat Franklin Roosevelt was elected mainly because he promised to try new solutions to end the Great Depression.
This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed effort to convert retreat into advance.
Soon after he was elected, Roosevelt launched a number of imaginative economic policies to solve the crisis.
Our greatest primary task is to put people to work. This is no unsolvable problem if we face it wisely and courageously. It can be accomplished in part by direct recruiting by the government itself, treating the task as we would treat the emergency of a war, but at the same time, through this employment, accomplishing greatly needed projects to stimulate and reorganize the use of our great natural resources. Hand in hand with that, we must frankly recognize the overbalance of population in our industrial centers. And by engaging on a national scale in a redistribution, endeavor to provide a better use of the land for those best fitted for the land. Yes, the task can be helped by definite efforts to raise the values of agricultural products, and with this the power to purchase the output of our cities. It can be helped by preventing realistically the tragedy of the growing loss through foreclosure of our small homes and our farms. It can be helped by insistence that the federal, the state, and the local governments act forthwith on the demand that their cost be drastically reduced.
Roosevelt's policies helped to reduce the amount of human suffering. But the Great Depression finally ended only with America's entry into World War II. Roosevelt's victory in 1932 also helped change the balance of power in American politics. Roosevelt brought new kinds of Americans to positions of power. Labor union leaders, Roman Catholics, Jews, blacks, Americans from families that had come from places such as Italy, Ireland, and Russia. These Americans repaid Roosevelt by giving the Democratic Party their votes. The 1920s and 30s also brought basic changes in how Americans dealt with many of their social and economic problems. The 1920s generally were a period of economic growth with little government intervention in the day-to-day lives of the people. But the terrible conditions of the Great Depression during the 1930s forced Roosevelt and the federal government to experiment with new policies. The government began to take an active role in offering relief to the poor. It started programs to give food and money to poor people, and it created jobs for workers. The government grew in other ways. It created major programs for farmers. It set regulations for the stock market. It built dams, roads, and airports. American government looked much different at the end of this period between the World Wars than it did at the beginning. Government had become larger and more important. It dealt with many more issues in people's lives than it ever had before. Social protest increased during the 1920s and 30s. Some black Americans began to speak out more actively about unfair laws and customs. Blacks in great numbers moved from the southern part of the country to northern and central cities. The 1920s and 30s also were a time of change for women. Women began to wear less conservative kinds of clothes. Washing machines and other inventions allowed them to spend less time doing housework. Women could smoke or drink in public, at least in large cities, and many women held jobs. Of course, the women's movement was not new. Long years of work by such women's leaders as Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony had helped women win the constitutional right to vote in 1920. The 1920s and 30s also were important periods in the arts. George Gershwin wrote his Rhapsody in Blue, originally for piano and jazz band. It later went on to become a symphony concert favorite. Writers like Ernest Hemingway, William Faulkner, Eugene O'Neill, and others made this what many called the golden age of American writing. Frank Lloyd Wright and other architects designed great buildings for American cities. Film actors like Clark Gable and radio entertainers like Jack Benny did more than make Americans laugh or cry. They also helped unite the country. Millions of Americans could watch or listen to the same show at the same time. Politics, the economy, social traditions, art. All these changed for Americans during the 1920s and 30s. And many of these changes also had effects in countries beyond America's borders. However, the change that had the most meaning for the rest of the world was the change produced by the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. America's modern history as a great superpower begins with its reaction to that attack. It was a sudden event in the flow of history. It was a day on which a young land suddenly became fully grown.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.